This is a podcast for the MA in Online Journalism by Distance Learning at Birmingham City University.
Finding data is probably the most important stage in any data journalism project, and also quite often the most difficult. It's a stage that you're going to return to again and again as your project progresses and you find that you need extra data sets to provide the particular context or the particular extra piece of information that you need to make sense of this story. And so understanding how to find data and how to compile that data is a really key skill for any data journalist. And it's worth making a distinction here between two different processes of data journalism, what I would describe as passive and active data journalism. And these are the same as any other kind of journalism as a whole. There are stories that you respond to passively, possibly diary stories, and there are stories which you actively seek out. You might have a lead or a particular question or an idea for a story and you seek that out. And data journalism is no different. There are data dumps that you react to and you have to find stories in that data, and there are stories which start from a lead or a question and then you have to seek the data out to help you answer that. And there are a number of sources for both of these types of stories. First of all, that the passive data stories are likely to come from regular data dumps, if you like, from particular types of organisations. And it's worth subscribing to the RSS feeds of particular websites which can provide these regular supplies of data. An obvious source, for example, is the government's open data portal, data.gov.uk. On the data page of that website, you'll find an RSS feed for random new data announcements. And most of the data that the government publishes will go through the data.gov.uk portal. The site also has a community, by the way, where you can talk to other people about the data that's being published there and what they're doing with it. Another useful website is the Office for National Statistics. They also have an RSS feed of their latest news, and again, there'll be some big and very obvious data sets that you can start to drill into as they're released. The site also has a useful search facility for general data sets, which will more than likely come in useful for general context for any sort of data stories that you're pursuing. Then there are some open data portals. Openly Local, which was created by Chris Taggart, aggregates data from local authorities on their spending, among other things. And there are RSS feeds there that you can subscribe to if you want to follow a particular local authority. Open Charities does the same for charity annual reports on the Charity Commission website. And Open Corporates does that for companies. In addition, you might want to look at What Do They Know, which is a website that allows people to submit freedom of information requests to public bodies. And it also provides an RSS feed, so you can follow all of the FOI requests, that are made to a particular organisation or that include a particular keyword. So these are useful RSS feeds to subscribe to if you're interested in a regular supply of data that's being published. You might also want to look at particular regulators and monitors in particular fields. So if you're looking at education, for example, you might want to look at any data that Ofsted is publishing and so on. And as I said, there are a number of open data platforms, and it's worth keeping an eye out for new ones. So, for example, Ask the EU recently was launched to look at FOI requests at an EU level. So that's the passive side of data journalism. On the active side, you're likely to be seeking out sources of data, and here it's useful to have some specialist skills around advanced searching and particular ways of getting hold of data that might not be given to you in the sense that some of those other more passive sources of data would. So, for example, if you're searching on Google, as you might do for a particular piece of data, there are things called operators which can help you limit your search in ways that make it more likely that you're going to find what you're looking for. For example, I've said previously that if you're using Google, you should imagine the page that you expect to find rather than search for the thing that you're looking for. So in other words, if you're looking for statistics on education, then imagine what form that's going to take. Well, it's likely to be in a spreadsheet, it's likely to be on a governmental website, and it's likely to use particular jargon like free school meals or SEN for special educational needs. So you want to search for those terms. Now, the jargon is pretty straightforward, but how do you search for a file that's going to be a spreadsheet? Well, you can use this, you can do this by using the file type operator. So as you're typing your search, add the word file type, all one word, colon, XLS. XLS is the extension that you get when you save a file as an Excel spreadsheet. So you'll notice that the file name will be something like educationstatistics.xls. If it was a Word document, it would end in .doc. If it was a PDF, it would end in .pdf, and so on. And so you can use the file type operator to limit your search so that only Excel spreadsheets will come in the results. And that can increase your chances of finding the data remarkably, really, because you will leave out all of the websites that are just talking about this, about statistics, and you'll actually find spreadsheets. If XLS doesn't work, you can also try PDF, as I've mentioned, doc, and PowerPoint, PPT, because sometimes people will publish statistics in those formats as well. Again, it's more likely that they would publish in one of those formats than they would in a normal web page. So the file type operator is one way to do that. If you if it doesn't work for you, try the advanced search feature in Google, which is now at the bottom of the Google search page. If you click on advanced search, you will get an option to search by file type on the page that appears, and you can use that to specify that you just want spreadsheets, for example. So file type is one way to narrow your search, particularly if you're looking for data. The other one is site. And this allows you to specify the type of website that you want to look within. Now, I mentioned governmental websites. Governmental websites all share particular types of web addresses. Local government websites, for example, all end in .gov.uk. Many central government ones do as well. Other useful domains to know of are MOD.uk for the Ministry of Defence, NHS.uk for the National Health Service, and Police.uk for the Police Service. Also, if you're searching educational institutions, you might want to limit your search to AC.uk. If you're looking at charities and voluntary organisations and campaigning organisations, many of whom publish data and research, you might want to use org.uk or org. Now, you can limit your search, as I said, by using the site operator, and this takes the shape of something like site colon org.uk or site colon gov.uk. And here's a good one to try right now. If you search for disclosure log site colon gov.uk, you'll get a list of results that are only from governmental websites and that mention the phrase disclosure log, which is where institutions publish their responses to freedom of information requests, or they publish lists of the FOI requests that they've received. So limiting your search by domain and by file type can really increase the chances of finding the data that you're looking for. And there are a number of other operators that you can use as well. For example, quotation marks are useful for limiting your search to exact phrases. So instead of searching for disclosure log, which might include results that include both words but in different places, you can search for disclosure log in quotation marks, which will only bring back results with that exact phrase in. Likewise, you can use quotation marks to specify that the particular term appears in the page itself, because sometimes Google will give you results for pages which are linked to with the phrase rather than actually contain the words that you are searching for. And other things to be worth to think about searching for include database, because the contents of databases are invisible often to search engines. So search for the database itself, and then once you've found that, you can search for contents of the database. Now, databases present an extra problem in terms of gathering data, which is that often you want the contents of a database rather than the results of any particular search. And there is a way to get hold of this called scraping. Now, scraping can take many forms, but fundamentally it involves capturing information from a database or a web page or a series of web pages and storing it in a table or a database so that you can interrogate that information. There are a number of scraping tools. ScraperWiki is one which also has a community of developers who will offer to sometimes help you scrape the contents of a website, or you can offer a bounty for them to do so. There's a Firefox plugin called Outwit Hub, which is useful for scraping contents of series of results from a database query. There's another tool called Needlebase, which does the same for databases. And you can use a Google Docs formula called equals import XML. And there are a number of posts on my blog that give a step-by-step guide to using import XML for scraping web pages into Google Docs. If you go to onlinejournalismblog.com/tag/import XML, you'll find those guides, and I'll put a link at the end here. So there are a number of ways that you can scrape information from web pages. Some of them are quite easy, some of them require programming knowledge, some of them require buying particular tools, some of them involve using free web-based tools. And depending on the shape that the data takes, that will basically determine what sort of scraping you might need to do, or you might need to get someone else to do. But the one final point to make about scraping is that it depends on a regular structure within the data. So if the data is in some sort of structured format, then it's normally possible to scrape it. If it's in a table on a web page, then it's very easy to scrape that. If it's in a series of results from a database query, then as long as those results share a particular structure, they always have a title and then a name and then a code and then a description and so on, then again, that's going to make it easier to scrape. Once you've scraped it, you will need to clean it as well, because there will be dirty data, incorrect data, and mistakes as well. But that's something for another time. In the second semester, we have a module on multimedia journalism, and I'll be covering data journalism in some more depth there. But I just want you for now to understand some of the basic principles of what's possible with data in terms of scraping and the tools that are there as well. But more generally, how to find data more easily and more quickly, and also how to make sure that you're receiving a regular supply of data yourself through your RSS feeds.